know, Cindy Gallup in conversation with Justin Cook. Now playing a video at the start of their fireside chat. Need to get my story straight. Video's gone blank. Disappeared. It was meant to be a summary of his latest achievements. So here it's back. Standout product. Clothes. Big on clothes. Top Shop. 2012-13. Models by the seashore. Great stories. That line again. Get my story straight. Brazil, Vancouver, Marble Arch. $500,000 visits to Oxford Circus store. Every 6 months, I think. Justin Smith is young, open neck shirt. Looks like a dark suit from here. And you feel like falling down. Holding a mic. I'll carry you home. 250 pairs of jeans sold every half hour. Top Shop supports emerging talent. The most viewed fashion show ever. 4 million people, 100 countries watched the show. Recreated the first ever model plan. We're seeing his record of doing stuff on YouTube, putting stuff online. Huge success, apparently, at Top Shop. Press coverage at an all-time high. This is the introduction to what is called here a fireside chat. And Cindy Gallup's already been on stage this morning delivering a keynote. She's wearing black boots and an all-black, looks to me like leather outfit. And I happen to know she's flown in from Mexico this morning to be here in Dublin at the Web Summit. New York Times said Top Shop is a phenomenon. Okay, I've had enough of this now. It's quite enough. We don't have to see all of this man's advertising successes. We got the message. Connecting our physical and digital world. 20% online orders. 40% of customers who collect, then make another purchase in stores. Oh, the Sydney Morning Herald said the brand is on fire. Okay, you can tweet him at JC7777.
Justin and I connected around the BrandX conference earlier on this year, but we never actually met. So we met on the internet, we met on Twitter, we've been virtual friends for some time, and this is the very first time that I've actually met Justin in real life as well, so I'm very excited to be interviewing him. And Justin, why don't we start by just sharing with the audience your personal career journey, because obviously great video, but talk to the specifics of what you've done to date.
So I'm completely uneducated and unqualified to talk to anyone because I left school when I was 18. And I went to work in a Gucci store because my mum was like, you've got to go and get a job. And I was playing football. That's the only thing I cared about, but it wasn't a real job. And so I was working in the store, and a guy comes in one day and I serve him. He's like, oh, we need young people like you in the office. So I was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go work in the office. And I worked into it, and then I did the poster on it. And I was like, excellent. But it was the time when Tom Ford and the Metacritic survey had taken over, and he famously said there wasn't enough money to put in the photocopier. And I digitalized the post room. So I brought my own computer in, I set up this whole digital system. But I realized quite early on that if you're around amazing people, you can learn without being taught. And so I observed, you know, every day they asked me one question. And, you know, once I was arranging Tom Ford's apples for his OCD perfectly. You know, I was also acutely aware that if they were asking something, it was part of a bigger journey. And so I kind of recognized that. And they started buying loads of brands up, like Stella McCartney, McQueen, and Balenciaga, and then Stella asked me to come and work with her. I was like one of the seventh people. And I didn't really know who her dad was, because I was like 20 something. No one was like, oh my god, the Beatles! And I was like, I don't really know who they are. So I think she quite liked the fact that I was more in awe of her than my father. And we got very close, we bonded, and her mother had died of breast cancer, and her mother passed away like 2 years after hers. So we had like a kind of special bond. And then Burberry kind of headhunted me about 3 years later. And by which time I was kind of global head of PR. And, I kind of always pick brands, so I never really do any research into the companies I join at all, don't look at the balance sheet. But I pick companies that I think are primed for disruption and can, you know, have an opportunity to completely transform. And everyone's like, oh my god, it's so chabby, it's a mess, you know, why would you do that? I was like, yeah, but it's kind of like when you're on your knees, that's the biggest opportunity, you know, that's where Apple came from, that's where all the big companies come from. And then I did kind of a pretty successful job there, 5 years, and kind of rewrote the story. And I think of myself more as a narrator, so my job is really to convince the world that Burberry was becoming not just a luxury brand, but a global brand. And it was really driven by technology, you know. And then I had a chance to go and be the CMO of Topshop, which I did for about a year and a half. And that video is probably too long. But what I think is more impressive is that they'd never done anything digital before I got there. So they'd never spent a penny on anything digital. And it's one of the most successful high street brands in the world, but they didn't really value it as a channel. So that makes it all more fun. And then about halfway into my career there, someone approached me and said, what would you do if you could do anything? And I was like, well, I'd probably set a company up there. On one side, made technology, and on the other side, kind of consulted brands on what their strategy could be, and the technology was like, no, let's go do it. So we're launching something at the end of the year, which we think is going to cause a mass disruption to the social space. So keep watching. I might be back next year. Thank you.
So like a lot of people in the audience here, you are now a startup founder.
Yeah, I'm trying to be, yeah.
The name of your company is Innovate7.
Correct.
Your Twitter handle is JC7777.
I like 7.
What does 7 mean to you?
7 was my football number when I was playing, so I keep that with me. And I think, actually, I'm writing a piece of our company at the moment about sport, and I think, you know, sport is an amazing kind of barometer for industries and for businesses. So a lot of what we're doing is kind of going, you know, looking at education, looking at things that have stood still for a number of years, and going in and saying, well, look, this is not right, just because it's always been done that way, how could we change that? And if you can't find a company that you think can change it, then we'll invent it ourselves. And I think I love sport because, you know, you see, you know, like if a 17-year-old is the best player, you know, then they drop the 30-year-old and they put the 17-year-old, and a bit like what you were saying about women, you know, there aren't enough great women on board and the top of companies. And I think that sport is a really good ambassador for kind of, if you're the best, you know, you play. And that's what I think should happen in every industry. But inevitably, the 22-year-olds, the 23-year-old, or the women, you know, don't get their chance until the right moment. I think there's a great thing in Sheryl Sandberg's Leading, which is, you know, men are promoted based on their potential, and women are promoted based on their achievements, which is kind of, I think, what happens to young people as well.
Absolutely. And I want to just go back to your time at Burberry, because Burberry has been absolutely at the forefront of luxury brands in terms of digital technology, in a way that, the entire luxury sector is massively backward on that front.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's a huge tribute to that that Angela Ahrendts has just left to go and work for Apple. What do you think? Was it that you and Angela and Christine managed to do as a team to actually effect such a huge leap forward for Burberry on the digital tech front?
You know, I think you touched on the one piece of it, which was that luxury was so scared of digital. I think there was a perception that you couldn't be luxurious in the digital space, which still now, if you go on some of the top 10, you know, multi-billion pound companies, they don't sell online. And I think what we did was we kind of blew that apart and said, actually, what you can do is do something so rich and beautiful. You know, if you think of film as a medium, you have the power to create the story exactly as you want it to be told. And actually, it was such a, you know, we saw it as a massive enabler. So, you know, you could get the reach, you could get the engagement, you could entertain people, but we could also rewrite the history through beautiful imagery and get it to such a varying audience outside of who the customer was. And I think we realized very early on that the customer you know, if you look at 23, 24-year-olds in Korea, the way that they're interacting with content in the stores, you know, they're probably never going to go into a Chanel store or a Burberry store in their life, but they're going to buy the stuff, you know, through the way that they create an emotional connection with a brand. And there were five or six of them that were passionate about emotion. And I think people look at you like you're crazy if you say, you know, you need to put love into a brand, you need to love your job. But most people in the world go to work, they do their job, they go 9 to 5, and then they go, I've got to get out of it. And I think if you do something you love, it's so powerful. I think people really feel that. And I think Angela puts such a value on EQ and not just IQ, and I think that's what Apple's, you know, taking from it.
And so based on what you know of her and what you guys did as a team, what do you think she is going to do at Apple, and what would you expect to see at Apple in, say, a year's time, coming out of this moment?
So I think everyone's saying that she's gone there for wearable technology, which I think is probably like 2%, but they've also hired a guy called Paul Deneuve, who was a CEO of YSL. But to me, it's about the way that luxury brands are so good at the positioning and the innovation. And you know, it's easy to say that an £18 billion company's lost its way, which is kind of what our business is about, is recognizing, you know, that telling a company that's successful, actually, you know, what is success? What does that look like? Is it just monetary? But I think that she will recognize that they've become obsessed with product. And one of our big beliefs in Burberry was that great product is the minimum expectation of your brand, especially when you're selling at a price point, you know, which Apple do, whatever you do. And therefore, it's all the amazing entertainment experience that you create around it. And I think she will be so good at positioning that, because for my mind, you know, they become kind of stuck in the weeds. You know, it's embarrassing that they're getting compared to Samsung and people that are making phones, because they've become about hardware. And Steve Jobs was like, we're always about the software. I was saying to my friend Ben Jones when he hit UA last night, you know, he was such a great marketer, and it's kind of, you know, he sold the brand always. He'd stand up and go, it's the greatest device in the world, it's an internet communicator, a phone, are you getting this? You know, and it's like, they're not in that space anymore, they're just being compared to, like, here's a phone, here's another phone. And at the time, you know, we all had 10,000 CDs in our bedroom, so they need to go north. You know, it's kind of like, if you've got fingerprint technology on your phone, that's great, but I would go to the top 100 retailers in the world and make that a payment method, you know, so you could pay with your finger. That would be innovation for me. So I think they'll work it out, and I think she'll bring that experience of, I think we were quite good at integrating technology into real people's lives. So the Googles and the Apples, they make amazing stuff, but they don't really know how to tell the people that, like, it's got a 10 by 15, 100 processing. Yeah, that's great, but what does it mean to the average person?
So, talking of Steve Jobs, Justin, when you announced that you were launching Innovate 7, famously, or possibly infamously, said, there's never been a British Steve Jobs or Mark Zuckerberg, so why shouldn't that be me?
Yes.
So what do you think qualifies you to potentially be the next British Steve Jobs?
Well, I think that age very cleverly asked me a question that they could write that as an answer to, which is powerful. But, you know, the truth is, I think that in his DNA, he was a storyteller, you know, and he grew up in a time where technology was advancing around him. I haven't read the whole book because I'm terrible at reading, so I like to read quotes. I'm going to make a book which is like 10 sentences about people's biographies that people can read, because I think that's how the world's reading. I blame Twitter. But basically, you know, he was growing up around this kind of, you know, mass innovation in you know, computers, and I think I'm growing up in a time which is mass innovation in social and communication. You know, we see a big opportunity in disrupting that space. It's still new, it's still 3 or 4 years old, and if you look at something, you know, like an airline, you know, there's probably 1,000 airlines. You know, you wouldn't go, well, there's one airline, you won't bother doing that because it's been done. There's only one of each of some of the companies that have been created in the last 10 years. So I think that we have our eye on a couple of areas that we can sort of, like, you know, maybe it won't be the greatest thing in the world, but we're gonna ask questions of them which will make them have to change their model. And you know, we have to wait and see. The biggest revolution.
Now, you've been hinting mysteriously at something very big coming later on this year. What can you tell us about that?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, come on! Just between friends.
Yeah, just between friends in the world. Hashtag love something. It's just the stuff that we talked about. There is a gap in a few positions. The most prevalent things that are being used right now that we just want to go in and connect the dots on. I think, especially around the way that people have been trying to monetize platforms, I think that is a really useful way of doing it, which isn't about making people see things they don't want to see. So, won't be back in a month. Pretty fast company.
Definitely more. Well, in the same vein, I noticed on Twitter recently that you were hanging out with will.i.am in LA.
As
well. Yeah, what was going on there?
We're working on a little project separate from the other one, which is, we're both quite obsessed with the Maker's Revolution, and we're going to try and bring that out towards the end of the year as well, but I just think there's a beautiful kind of, you know, period going on now. If you think when you were younger, especially for the guys in the audience, you know, you grew up playing computer games, and I think now what the kids should be growing up doing is making computer games. And so I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I look at them and I see my son like, doing handwriting, and it's like, I think it's great for most of you around, he could be doing it on an iPad. But I'm also thinking it's a bit like teaching your eye to ride a horse for 15 years and then take a driving test, you know, it's like, it feels irrelevant. So we're just looking at opportunities around what people can create that will be so crucial for their lives in 10 years' time. So I think everything they do is going to be about coding, creating, making, developing. And I mean, I think retail is going to get massively disrupted in the next 5-10 years. I think it's the next like music industry that's going to get slammed because we've got these guys, you know, with hundreds of millions worth of rent. And I don't think people are shopping in the same way at all. I think we're very close to people, you know, completely shifting their habits from not wanting to go into a store. I don't think the need to ever not want to try things on will go away, but maybe technology is advancing so quickly that people will be able to make their own things quicker. So it's kind of, it's a segue between that and where we are.
Are there people in the audience today that are potential clients at Innovate 7?
I don't know who's in the audience. Maybe if you're a company that thinks that you're doing an amazing job and you can't be better, then probably not. I mean, I live by a kind of mantra, which is Sir Francis Bacon, which is a wise man will create many more opportunities than he finds. So if we can, you know, get to companies that we think have lost their way a little bit, I think that's really interesting. But we don't want to come in and sit with them every day and be like, oh, your Twitter, you know, it's really bad. You should be tweeting about this. It's more about there's probably one or two areas that they don't realise are an opportunity. And really, it's companies that want to make an emotional connection with you, because I think there's going to be a massive, you know, like decluttering of all brands across, you know, every sector of print. You know, if you think of media, it's just not necessary to have so many people that don't have a clear point of view. And so we want to help people kind of, you know, be relevant, because, as I say, everything's changing.
And so if I ask you to sum up Innovate 7 and what you can deliver in one line, what do we?
The future.
There you go, guys. That's an opportunity. We're out of time. Thank you very much indeed, Esther.